When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it at shortstop. Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
If that line falls on the right, babe, not that Mackie.
McMonagle here with you on this Wednesday morning. 888-808-1019. That's the number to call. Me and Rami rolling with you for 3 hours. We got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan. What a day. What a baseball day. The deadline's finally over. We can stop talking about it. We can stop trying to figure out who the Yankees are going to get, who they're not going to get, what are the Mets going to do, how serious are they taking this deadline. Are they willing to make uncomfortable trades? Will the Yankees make uncomfortable trades? We know what's going to happen. And for both teams, for me, underwhelming. But we got to start with the games. We'll get to the trade deadline. And again, like I said, certainly for the Yankees and even for the Mets, it's a little bit of a different dynamic. I get it. But I felt there was opportunities for both teams to do more, even though prices were sky high in this trade deadline. And a lot of guys we all assumed were going to move didn't move. Some guys moved for ridiculous prices. We'll get to the deadline and my reactions to it, but we got to start with the two games. We got to start with the two victories that took place last night. The pitching performance from Manaea, everything else that went on with that game, and we'll start with the New York Yankees because of the nature of that win and because now Jazz Chisholm is a thing. Smooth Jazz is the thing. And watching this team, and really the whole day from the trade deadline, and being underwhelmed as a Yankee fan, and not being as, I thought Cashman was going to make a lot more moves. The moves he did make, I like. And I don't think you can underestimate what Jazz Chisholm's going to bring to this team. I think it's a, you know, you always have with the trade deadline the reaction of the immediate, like the day of, we're waiting, we're sitting around. You know, some of us are sleeping. But you're waiting around, checking your rehab, you know, refreshing your phone constantly. And so when things don't come, you forget the trade that happened 2 days ago or a day ago or whatever. You forget that as part of the deal and just frustrated by what happened in the day. And I was frustrated by the lack of movement from both teams, quite honestly, at least impact moves from both teams. Then you find out the news that the ace, Gerrit Cole, who did not pitch well against the Mets in his last outing, is missing the start and is skipping the start. And Will Warren's going to make it because of full body fatigue, which is just, you know, it seems like, and listen, I like to give Cashman and Boone the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's me, Chris McMonagle. How are you? But you know that everybody and their mother thinks that that is going to be, oh, you know, he's going on the IL. Who knows when we see Gerrit Cole again? Full body fatigue. No one believes that. No one thinks he rolled out of bed and said, I just feel like I'm fatigued. Like, nobody believes that. And we'll see what actually comes from it. But from that moment throughout the game and to win a game that, without question, from almost every aspect of it, from just hearing that everything that happened yesterday points to a Yankee loss. I'm going to give you 5 things practically that from the moment I woke up, everything that happened was leading towards a Yankee loss, especially over the last 8 or so weeks. Everything. From hearing that Cole was going to miss the start, from the inability to get a left-handed reliever as they're jettisoning the only left-handed reliever they have in Ferguson. Like, there's no lefty reliever coming. There's no other reliever coming besides Leiter, and we'll get to it. They don't make any addition more in the offense. Nothing at the trade deadline. Cole isn't going to pitch. Then Warren gives up a 3-run home run and they fall behind. They score a run first. Then they give up the run immediately. Then they fall behind the Philadelphia Phillies, mind you, in Philadelphia. And yes, they've lost 4 series now, 5 series in a row. But still, the best record in baseball, the best team all year long in baseball, to fall behind them 3 runs early on in that game, it's over. We've seen it before, but not with this team. Not with this team that continues to score runs. Now, what is it? 47 runs with the help of a couple extra innings. 47 runs in the last 5 games. And to come back and win that game after, obviously, Jazz Chisholm hits 2 home runs to give him the lead. And he's just been, I know we want to compare the responses to playing third base between Jazz Chisholm and Gleyber Torres. And I understand. Well, look, let me just say this. Jazz Chisholm is a guy coming over here from the Marlins, happy to be on a winning squad. He's just coming here to the Yankees. Gleyber Torres grew up with the Yankees. The answers don't have to be the same. All right? I will get into it a little bit. I understand Jazz Chisholm. I'll play wherever. I don't care. Yeah, but he just got here. He's got anything built up. It's a different animal. And we've seen Gleyber Torres be moved to shortstop and fail. He's probably doing the team a betterment by saying, you know what? I'm not going to move because I suck when I move. So you know what, Boone and Cashman? If you guys are too stupid to realize I shouldn't move off second base, then I'll do it for you. But to watch Jazz Chisholm come in, hit these 2 home runs, change the vibe of this team, just instantly, they just needed something. And yes, he's come in and he's the first Yankee ever to hit 4 home runs in his first 3 games. Right? To have back-to-back days of multiple home runs and to hit a go-ahead 3-run shot when it looked like walking Soto and Judge was going to come up empty, which is so important to this damn team. A terrible night for the catcher who has been great. Don't get me wrong. You love what you've seen. Over the last handful of, month, really, of Wells, he's been incredible, but he had a terrible night. And for Chisholm to hit that home run, it's an enormous home run. It's a game-changing home run. It's something that if they can have now, we've seen this lineup change dramatically. Verdugo, and I talked about it, forget the trade deadline, be damned. Verdugo has to hit. Stanton has to hit. Obviously Stanton has to hit too, but Torres has to hit. And Volpe has to hit. Those are the 3 guys I was pointing to because I never believed Verdugo or Torres were getting traded. I knew they were going to be a part of this team in some way, shape, or form. I thought there was a chance they'd bring in someone else and he would have to fight for his position more than he is now. But I knew he was going to be a part of this team. You knew Verdugo was going to be a part of this team. And they needed those 3 guys to hit. And they've hit. Plus, you've added Chisholm to the middle of this lineup and it feels completely different. And being behind 4-1 and now going through 2 of the 3 best pitchers in this staff, watching this pitching rotation that has been as dominant as any in the sport, and going into Philadelphia and taking the first 2 and falling behind 4-1, this game felt over. And it felt like, here we go. All the excitement of Jazz Chisholm and the winning streak was going to be let down by the idea of, whoop, now all of a sudden the ace is hurt. Whoop, all of a sudden the trade deadline that everybody expected, at least a bunch of moves, whether they'd be successful or not, became underwhelming and Brian Cashman yet again didn't please any single Yankee fan at the trade deadline. And now here we go, we're down 4 runs and this thing is going to fall apart. They're going to lose today, they're going to lose tomorrow in a short turnaround, and they're going to lose this series, and all the momentum built up over the last couple days is going to fade away, and all we're going to talk about is how much we hate Brian Cashman, how much we hate Aaron Boone, how much we hate this team, and away we go. And instead, Mr. Cool Jazz himself, Jazz Chisholm, hits that home run, and they get to the 9th inning, and you know what happens there. And I know Clay Holmes is going to be a talking point. I get it. He wasn't good in this game. It's not like the other day that I'll defend him left and right when fielders are falling down and blowing ground balls. He didn't get 4 outs in this game. He was not good enough. That wild pitch is unacceptable. But I'm sorry. You know how I feel. The amount of vitriol and the amount of people telling me Clay Holmes can't be a closer, I just find it ridiculous. If you watched this performance last night, he doesn't give up any hard contact whatsoever. Yes, the biggest flaw about this particular argument is that the defense behind him isn't any damn good. That is the biggest problem. And you know what I say to that? That doesn't change if you move him to the eighth inning. That doesn't change if you move him to the seventh inning. The answer is either do not pitch Clay Holmes, because I don't think this is a ninth inning thing. I don't think the moment's too big for him. He comes out there, has great stuff, has bad at bat after bad at bat after bad at bat, little light ground balls, swinging at curveballs, swinging at sliders, out 2 feet outside of the off the plate, barely making contact for a little ground ball that gets the inning started, and you know the inning is going the way it's going. You know it. Once that ball is rolled down the third baseline, you know exactly how it's going. Whether it's ground balls too soft to turn double plays, Glaber not being able to get the ball out of his hand. I don't know if he turns the double play anyway, but I'd like to have seen it try. I'd like to have seen maybe he would have had a chance to turn a double play, but you know what's going to happen. And I understand that, and I'm upset with the amount of blown saves, and Clay Holmes then throws the wild pitch that cost him the run with two outs. No one's saying you can't go out and get Kyle Schwarber out. You can. So by no means am I defending him the way I defended him in the game against Baltimore when Verdugo fell down. But at the same time, I don't believe this is a ninth inning thing. This is an all-star reliever. Whatever you think about that, you could laugh at me now if you'd like. But he's an all-star reliever who's got good stuff and who gets nothing but soft contact and is beat on a routinely basis by it. And it's puzzling and it's frustrating, but I don't think the idea that, oh, well, just put anybody in there. Put Tonkin in there because he pitched well last night. Or put anybody in there. Like, if they move him the seventh or the eighth inning, this doesn't happen? You think his stuff doesn't lead to soft contact in the set? You think he could pitch with a lead in the eighth inning and you'd be comfortable with it? I don't know what the answer is. And I'm open to moving Clay Holmes, and I'm frustrated that today they didn't get a reliever that would at least give me an option. Maybe Leiter will be. He came in just right off the flight from Cincinnati and pitched well in this game. Maybe in 2 or 3 days, a week, if another blown save happens, you move Leiter. I'm fine with it. By no means am I stomping my feet, holding my breath, and saying, Clay Holmes is the closer, Clay Holmes is the closer. But at the same time, I watch the games. I watch the games. And he gets beat by the most ridiculous. Every single time he makes a pitch, he gets beat by it. And we can go over the strikeout content. Everyone says, oh, swing and miss. You need more swing and miss stuff. I agree the bullpen overall needs more swing and miss stuff. But the idea you need to strike people out to get saves is inaccurate. And I will point you to Mariano Rivera. All right, I don't want to do this again. I've already done this. But Mariano Rivera struck out the same number of people as Clay Holmes. Now, he was Mo. And if Clay Holmes came in and walked the ballpark, we'd have a different argument. He came in, he pitched well, and he got beat by unlucky crap. That's just the truth. You don't have to like it, and I'm not saying he has to be the closer. But let's not act. I heard Keith call it malpractice to throw him out there. I disagree. I do not think it's malpractice to throw Clay Holmes in the ninth inning. I don't know where to throw him, and I think he's got good stuff and has as many bad at-bats and as many uncomfortable at-bats and creates as many what should be outs as anybody else in that bullpen. And if you look at his postseason numbers, he's been excellent in the postseason. But Clay Holmes is a subject we can get into all show long, I'm sure, 888-808-1019. But here's the point. They won a game after blowing that save. They have a miraculous end of that inning where, yet again, another ground ball that should be an easy play picked up by the timeless DJ LeMahieu. Well, that's another conversation on why the hell he's even in this game. And we can get into that, too, the defensive replacement nature of DJ LeMahieu, who, by the way, to be fair, if you watch the rest of the game, made scoops. I'm not sure Ben Rice makes. But when you have a ground ball hit right at you, can you please make the play? And Gleyber Torres makes a, get ready for this. Everyone sitting down? Are you prepared for this? I just want to let you know, because what I'm going to say is the truth, and you know it, whether you like it or not. And it boggles my mind as much as it's about to boggle you. Gleyber Torres makes the heads-up play of the game to keep the Yankees in it and saves the game. I know. I couldn't believe it myself. But there is no doubt that him not giving up on that play, watching it the whole way through, going to get it, and then making a perfect throw to Clay Holmes on the run, who also didn't stop running to cover first when the ball went up in the air. Got to give them both a little bit of credit. Saves the game, but that is a game the Yankees lose. 9 times out of 8 over the last 2 months. And somehow they figure out a way, despite DJ LeMahieu not being able to drive in a runner from third, despite all the other nonsense that went on, they come in, Leiter gets a nice inning to get them out without giving up the run. They manage to score enough. Gleyber Torres again comes through with the sacrifice fly, and somehow they win a baseball game that I don't know how they won. A baseball game they have lost over and over and over again over the last 2 months. And right now, whatever acquisitions they made at the deadline, and it's not enough for me either. And we're going to get into the deadline. But if Jazz Chisholm is going to be this player, now no one's expecting two home runs a night, but if Jazz Chisholm is going to be the kind of guy who flourishes in a new team with a lot more pressure, a lot more eyes. He talked about the crowd, the sizes of the crowd. He gets thrown right into Red Sox, Yankees. Now he's playing Philadelphia, a ballpark he's familiar with, playing in the NL East his entire career. But still an atmosphere with the Yankees and Phillies that he's not used to. He'll head home to play at Yankee Stadium. If he's the kind of guy built for this team, if he's the kind of guy who's going to play like this, come through with clutch moments, get thrown into the deep end, playing third base, and come through it the way he's come through it, well, then the deadline feels a lot better. A lot better than it did at 6 o'clock last night. It feels a lot better. And watching this team now win games on Saturday night against the Red Sox, they had no business winning. Winning games last night against Philadelphia that they had no business winning, have now won four in a row, taken two consecutive series, and the offense has awoken. And if Gleyber Torres is going to hit, and Verdugo's going to hit, and Volpe's going to hit, and Wells is going to hit, and Stanton's back, and this is Jazz Chisholm, then the deadline's not as bad as we might all think it is, including myself. And this team has a real chance to do exactly what we think it should do and compete for a World Series title. But that game last night, we can get into the Clay Holmes angle. I don't even want to get into it in the open. Sometimes I run my mouth. We'll get into it next. But just the idea of overcoming that. Because when Clay Holmes blows a game, they lose. When they fall behind 4-1, they lose. When Gerrit Cole gets scratched a couple of hours before the game, they lose. And all those things, all added together, they lose. Any one of those things happen, they lose, let alone all three. It feels different. It feels different. And then you get to the Mets, who, in my opinion, had an underwhelming trade deadline as well. Yes, they helped the team on the fringe. Yes, they managed to keep all their big-time prospects, who were asked about in a bunch of trades. If you listen to the new man from Milwaukee and Stearns, he told you everyone's asking for him, and I'm sure they are. That's what the deadline's about. And yes, they made some they picked up some pieces. They picked up some decent bullpen arms. They got another starter for this rotation. How good Blackburn is, we'll find out. But they didn't do anything to make me feel better about this team moving forward. I still feel good. You watch Manaea last night against a very good Minnesota team, and now have completely bounced back over the last two losses against Atlanta, give you an impressive performance. You win two games, and this is the sign of a good team. You do one or the other. You score a ton of runs in the first game. You come out, the offense struggles other than, you know, the home run from Vientos and the base hit from Martinez, but you figure out a way to pitch, and you get 11 strikeouts from Manaea. The rotation's really coming together without Kodai Senga. Has been a positive all year and is really looking its best that we've seen all year. Despite the injuries, Manaea gives you an incredible performance. You score just enough runs, you bounce back, and you feel good about the Mets. There's no doubt about it. In a building they haven't played well in, particularly at home. And you thought, as Senga went down and you lost the opportunity to really stick it to the Braves in the last two games of the series, how they were going to respond. And really, since the meeting, since Lopez threw his glove, and since that walk-off home run from J.D. Martinez, this team has responded every single time you had concerns. And so I believe in this team. And moving forward, I think as presently constituted, they're good enough to be a playoff team, they're good enough to compete, and they're good enough to, who knows, they're just as good as the Diamondbacks were last year. But for both of these teams, including the Mets, the big move that could have really put them over the top eluded them. And we'll get into it more as we get through the show. 888-808-1019. So obviously we'll talk about the deadline. We'll talk about the two impressive wins, the pitching performances, the offensive performances, the come-from-behind nature, and of course, Clay Holmes is the closer of the New York Yankees, as well as the underwhelming performance from the GMs for both teams, in my mind, although Stearns is probably sitting a little bit prettier considering the feeling around the team and the expectations of what was to be done, where Brian Cashman really fell flat. And I'm sure a lot of Yankee fans are pissed off this morning, so we'll get to it. And you got to talk about Clay Holmes. You got to tell me how terrible Clay Holmes is. Come on. Give me a call. We'll argue about it. Big whoop. Want to fight about it? 888-808-1019. We'll come back, do that. We'll talk about the lack. You want to talk about lackluster? How about the final episode of off-season edition Hard Knocks? What a snooze fest the draft was. That built all up for that crappy episode?
Was that the last one?
That was it. See ya. Final episode. Wah, wah. Although it was a very good series all along. So we'll get to that, too. We have plenty to get to. Your phone calls, obviously, will take us through the morning until 5 o'clock. 888-808-1019. McMongle here with you till the warm-up show right here on The Fan.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL on CBS game every week on Paramount Plus.
All right, 226. Rick Monaco here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Day of the trade deadline again. Oh, I understand both general managers. I do. I understand Stearns not wanting to trade away the top prospects for, certainly for rentals. Like, I mean, I understand that. I believe in this offense so much. And maybe it's because I'm a Yankee fan that watching a full-blown top-to-bottom lineup that scores a ton of runs and has good hitters up and down the lineup makes me think that they're primed for a October. And you've got a closer now who was brought into the game last night in a positive. I forgot to mention that, too. The game, besides Manaea, you got Stanek, who comes into the game, pitches better in his second go-round with the second appearance with the Mets, although, you know, Alonso has the bad throw and creates a little bit of a jam, and you bring in Diaz for the first. I don't know if he's brought in for the first time asking for four outs. I know it's the first time he's gotten a four-out save. I don't remember if he's failed at that attempt or not. But anyway, so he comes in, he gets the four-out save. That's important if you could start to get Diaz, because if you remember, that was such a useful tool of his 2 years ago, whether it was just full-blown pitching the seventh or eighth inning, if that's where the game was on the line, or being able to get multiple outs in the eighth and then in the ninth. So if he can revert back to who he was, and you take, you know, Brazoban or, you know, Ryan Stanek now and Zuber and some of the different relievers they've added to this bullpen, Maton, and hopefully solidify that with guys who you're hoping, you know, are certainly better than what you've had. You've improved a little bit. You were able to do it without many of your top or any of your top prospects. You've saved the farm system and you've improved. I understand that. That's in many circles going for it. And that's adding to this team. It's not certainly not subtracting, and it's helping this team move forward. But I thought that this team has had a special, as you're watching the Braves fade, and I know you weren't able to really put your foot on the throat of the Braves and win that series, but still, I know they added Soler again, like they did in 21 when they won the World Series, but I don't know, things very rarely ever work out again. But you're watching them fade. The Phillies have now lost five straight. The Dodgers traded for Flaherty, but they've been struggling with injuries and whatever else. I know they're going to get Mookie Betts back, but they've been perennial playoff failures other than 2020. I just thought there was an opportunity to really go out there and make a move that would really make you better. Go out there and get a Flaherty from Detroit. Go out there and you make that move instead of the Dodgers. Go get a guy who could pitch, you know, either at the top middle or top of the rotation. Go out there and make a big move. Go out there and trade for a Skubal and have someone who's under control for the next few years as an ace of your staff. Like, that's the kind of move I was looking for. I'm not going to kill the Mets. I'm not screaming about the Mets. I don't think they had a terrible trade deadline. I think it was fine. It was fine. It doesn't make me feel really any better about them. I'm confident in them already. I feel good about the Mets already. I've been talking about it for a while. I think they've shown me enough. Offensively, I love the team. I think they've got guts. I like the manager. I like some of the leaders on this team. I think Lindor has really stepped up his game offensively, obviously, since moving the leadoff. But since he's called that meeting, it's felt like he's established himself as the leader of the team. Alvarez, despite his slumps, and now he hasn't played in a couple days. Hopefully he plays tomorrow. His leadership, his animation behind the plate, his ability to get the most out of these pitchers. You know, the idea that all these guys have hit. You got the bottom of the order having career years up and down the lineup. Like, it's just, there's so many signs that are pointing to this Met team having a little bit of a special group. And I wanted to really not just fringe help it, not just say, hey, you know, our worst reliever, our worst reliever just got better. Like, okay, your best reliever didn't. Your second, who knows? You never know who's going to come in and pitch well. But it just felt like, all right, I owed it to this team to do the bare minimum of helping them out. And I'll add a Winker, and I'll add, you know, a Blackburn to the back end of the rotation. Maybe you could find something there. I'll get you Stanek. I'll get you Maton. I'll get you Brazoban, if I'm saying that correctly. I'm probably not. Who's having a good year? Don't get me wrong. He's got an ERA under 3, pitching well for the Marlins, but is still better than selling. Is still better than not doing anything. Is still good enough to make this Met team dangerous. But they had an opportunity to really go out there and really make this team dangerous. They chose not to. Still could win, and you're still set up for the future, which is ultimately the goal of this team heading in, where Brian Cashman's goal was to shock and awe and make sure that this team is one of the favorites in the American League to go win a championship and to get back to the World Series first time since 2009. And in that effort at this deadline, he failed. He failed. One reliever. Right, I know they got two relievers. We'll see what the other reliever is. They got pretty much one reliever in Leiter. And they added Jazz Chisholm. That's it. Now, again, Jazz Chisholm. You know what's funny about the Jazz Chisholm name? No one ever says, you know, you always mix up the letters. You know, you never say both. Like, you always mix them up. It's never just like Chaz Chisholm. If you say Chaz, then you follow it up with the J at the end of the last name. You always mix them up. You never,
Chaz Chisholm.
Right. You always say Chaz Chisholm. You never say Chaz Chisholm. Once you say Chaz, then you're bound to get the last name wrong.
Chaz Chisholm.
That's why not only do people say Chaz Chisholm, but if you listen to it, people will say and catch themselves if they say Chaz, they don't finish the last name because they know Chisholm is coming. I'm telling you. I think Meredith did it. She accidentally in the post game yesterday called him Chaz, and then stopped. Because you automatically mix them up. You can't just say the first name wrong, but still get the last name right. You always mix it up. So if you hear someone say Chaz, they realize, oh no, I'm not following it up because I'm going to get it wrong. They stop. They stop mid-jism. Which is very difficult to do, I'm told. 888-808-1019. That's enough for the wordplay. I thought it went well. I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to pull a George Costanza and just quit while I'm ahead. But let's get back to the calls because, yes, the deadline was underwhelming, but you never know. And, you know, I understand Brian Cashman. When you look at what the Padres do, and please, I told Keith to his face, I'll tell anybody else, I do not want to hear anyone say, oh, man, if only the Yankees or the Mets or anybody else was like the Padres. Oh, I'm jealous of what the Padres go out there and do, always making these big moves. Yeah, it's exciting for the day. They lose constantly. They are the biggest group of underachieving team I've ever seen. At least the Yankees can point to injuries. What the hell is wrong? And let me ask you a question here with the Padres, since I'm on this for a second. If you're the Padres, and you're going to tell me, oh, what a great job. The Padres are always in it. Look at them making moves. They traded three of their best five prospects for a rental reliever. If you are going to put that much effort into this season, if it's worth it to you, that this year's chasing a championship is as important to you that you are willing to trade three of your best five prospects for a reliever, then why don't you keep Juan Soto and chase a championship? Why would you trade Juan Soto, even if you can't pay him? Who cares? This year is so important, you're willing to trade three of your top five prospects. So why on earth would you not keep Juan Soto and try and win a championship? You add Arise, you add obviously Dylan Cease, you go all this for all this. And then you trade Juan Soto? It makes no freaking sense. They're still, what, a couple games over 500? They got Manny Machado. They got Xander Bogaerts. They got Fernando Tatis. They got Dylan Cease. They got Arise. Now they got Tanner Scott. They got this killer bullpen, and they'll still lose. So please stop telling me, if only we were like the Padres. Drives me crazy. All right, let's get to the calls. Mike in Jersey City. What's up, Mike?
How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing okay. I was miserable during the day, and now I'm feeling good after that victory from the New York Yankees. And the Mets pleased me as well with that pitching performance from Manaea.
Yeah, big win tonight for the Yankees.
Big win.
Big fan of what Jazz is doing so far. However,
how could you not?
I like to compare my Yankees team to sitting down to, you know, a steak dinner. You know,
you always got to get the wedge. Who's the wedge salad? Because that's very important. You got to get the wedge.
Yeah, you like that.
Okay,
nice,
I'm sorry. Classy, I got it.
Dinner, and then you're coming in and you're eating the steak, and suddenly these days I just get a punch of lime right in the mouth and this Jazz Chisholm. I mean, the guy's a great player, but this is just not the Yankee way. The swag is not the Yankee way. I mean, we like the class on the bench. Judge walks around with the class, with a different type. He's on a different level than everyone else. He's not with the rest of the players. Jazz is, you know, just swaggy. This is not the Yankee way. This is not Yankee pride. This is not pinstripe pride for me. You know, I'm really not liking what I'm seeing from a personality wise. However, you know.
Are you serious?
Back in the George days, this would never have happened. And, you know.
Yeah, I know, because they had Mel Hall bringing in live cougars into the clubhouse. Please stop. I hope you're not really being serious, right? This is like a con. This is, you're putting me on.
No, I'm being serious right now.
Pride. Yeah,
Prince,
please stop. Please stop saying Prince Time. They tried that once for preseasons on Yes. The show failed. Pride, Power, and Pinstripes. Remember that show they used to do every spring training? Yeah, they stopped doing it. Stop. What are you talking about? Seriously, what in the world are you talking about? And when George was around, this wouldn't fly. What are you, crazy? What are you, absolutely nuts? I mean, he brought in Deion Sanders. Is there more swag than Deion Sanders? They had, I mean, you want to talk about un-Yankee-like. Again, Mel Hall. Watch the documentary of the 1990 New York Yankees. Mel Hall brought a live cougar, an animal, into the clubhouse and then was openly dating high school girls. Like, let's not try and say that the Yankee way would have not permitted Jazz Chisholm to come here and wear a belt that's a little different color than the uniform, or not, you know, pimp a home run, which, by the way, was an enormous home run, and I don't care how he flips the bat or walks it. This, he's been a breath of fresh air. I mean, are you serious? This guy just hit four home runs in 2 days. He just hit a three-run home run that pretty much, I know the game goes into extra innings after it, but pretty much won them the game. He has been the difference. From the minute they announced that they traded for him, they haven't lost yet. And you are seriously going to call me up and tell me that this isn't pinstripe power or whatever nonsense you called it, pinstripe pride? Are you serious? Please, I mean, you had to have been kidding. You're probably the same guy who called up and said they should trade for George Springer and got me to quit that one time. Yeah, you must be the same guy. It's got to be the same. And it was also the first call of the show that day, too. You can't be serious right now. Whatever he's brought, it has been a breath of fresh air. It's what they desperately need. At the beginning of the year, the swag of Verdugo was a huge part of this. They need more of it. They need more Jazz. They need more smooth Jazz. Not less. They need more swag, not less. What are you talking about? My God. Ray in Brooklyn, what's up, Ray?
Yo, see, Mac, I think he actually has the best ending to a home run trot with the Euro step. Like, when he really, like, engages in it and you know, like when it's a big home run, because like when it's not a big home run, like a ninth inning yesterday, he kind of like half-assed it. But today when he hit the big home run and he was really into it, I think that's probably the best like ending to a home run trot in the MLB. But, all right, C-Mac, listen, you know I'm your guy when it comes to Cashman and Boone and stuff. Mm-hmm. However, I am going to vehemently yet respectfully disagree with you on two things. All right, so first, Gleyber Torres.
Yes.
He was horrible last week. When Judge got hurt on June 2nd, Gleyber Torres single-handedly played the Yankees out of a playoff spot by hitting 198 with 7 RBI in June. So when Judge went down, he was the furthest thing from stepping up and, you know, and filling on those shoes, even in the least. And then the next month, okay, he had a little 12 RBIs, 19 total RBIs in June and July for a combined like 230 average. Mm-hmm. He was good when the season was over. He and, you know, Giancarlo Stanton and LeMahieu, and LeMahieu's another guy who didn't hit till the season was over.
That's
so,
true.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, it's true for Torres, too. Look it up, 198 in June with 7 RBI. I mean, he killed us.
Yeah,
when Judge went down.
You might be right on that. I watched the entire year last year, top to bottom, from April to September. He was their best consistent hitter.
It's not true.
It is true.
Hit 198 with 7
RBIs. So in 1 month, they all have it.
The season was on the line, though. He was trash in June and July.
Not in June and July. I watched the entire season, bro. The entire season. It was the best of Gleyber Torres we had seen since 2019. He was their best.
In September and August.
He had an 800 OPS.
In September and August, he was fantastic when the season was over, yes.
No, I mean, that's just not fair.
Clay Holmes is on pace to break the record for blown saves. I'm tired of hearing him. Look, you're dying on a hill that's not worth dying on with him.
I'm not dying on anything. I said move him out of the closer role. I'm just saying I watch the games. I can't get so furious with him when I'm watching him get soft roller after soft roller.
All right, C-Mac, I'll give you credit. You said you're not married to him as the closer.
Correct.
That's fantastic. That's progress. So he can't pitch. It does make a difference if he pitches in the middle innings, because you're confident in his Yankees lineup that if he gives up a run or two in the middle innings, we have time to get him back. In the ninth inning, we have no time to get him back.
All right, so you're saying you're just saying he's awful and jettisoning him to like the do you watch him? You think he's awful?
He's not a closer. I'm saying
That's what I'm saying. All right, so when you say he's not a closer, do you think he could pitch in the seventh or eighth inning? Because I'm telling you right now, if he blows leads in the eighth inning, this is not a guy who can't close.
But we can get those runs back, because if he's doing it early in the game, we can add.
That's not a closer. You're saying he's not good, and he's going to give up runs wherever he pitches.
That's not the same role as a closer. It might be a mental thing.
It's not a mental thing. He's giving up soft contact. He pitched really well last night. Every at bat they had bad, uncomfortable at bats.
And respectfully, because I don't really want to get into. I'm not one of the other callers that likes to get into.
I understand.
So we'll just respectfully.
I understand. But what I'm saying is, your wording. There's a difference between saying he stinks and then he's just not a closer. I think the not a closer argument is tough.
Yeah, he's not a closer.
I watched him last night. He got out after out. I mean, it's just. Look at what happened. First leadoff, he got one of the better hitting catches in the sport to swing at a breaking ball 6 inches off the plate and rolled it down the third baseline. I understand the amount of blown saves. The last blown save, the fielder fell down on a fly ball that had a 99% catch rate. They fell down.
C-Mac, you heard of the saying that good teams make their, you need good breaks and they make their own breaks. So bad teams always find a way to lose. He always finds a way to blow it. So, it applies there also. That's the only thing that's
I get it. I think that's fair. I think I understand that he's blowing saves. I can't say that he isn't.
In 2022, he had the yips for a pitcher, and that's not any good.
When
you remember, in 2022, when he couldn't find the plate, and he was hitting the backstop.
That was the worst stretch of his career for 2 months in 2022. You're 100% right.
I mean,
that's long done. He was an all-star this year. The Yankees didn't pick it. I didn't pick it. He was an all-star this year. He does not stink. Yeah. He has good stuff. Watch it last night. That breaking ball is dynamic. His stinker is dynamic. He gets bitten by bad luck. Even the Trey Turner. Like, how many at-bats does he have to get bad swings and little rollers? I understand that that costs you, and I understand it's a major problem. Even when he's at his best, he allows guys on base because of the nature of his stuff. But I'm just saying, I watch him, and I have a tough time just killing him and saying he stinks when I watch great hitters have terrible at-bats and put out weak crap that somehow beats him. That's all I'm saying.
And I get what you're, I get what you're saying. There is some validity to what you're saying. We both watch the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's unfortunate, but sometimes you're just that player that's never going to be a
I know, and I understand. And if they want to move him out of the closer role, fine. But it's not like he's pitching that poorly. Like, I heard Keith say before, he's like, you know, Diaz was the closer, and Diaz stunk and blew a bunch of saves, and they took him out of the closer. Why can't they take Clay Holmes out of the closer? Diaz was giving up home runs. Diaz was getting knocked around. Diaz had no confidence. Diaz was giving up terrible, like, Bell hit monster home runs. He was getting killed. He was getting knocked around the ballpark. He couldn't throw a strike. Clay Holmes last night came in and got bad swing after bad swing. Like, there is a difference. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he can't be moved. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have gone out and got a better closer. I wanted to go get Tanner Scott. Don't get me wrong. I wanted someone to legitimately give them an option to put in the closer role. I'm not dying on any hill other than the amount of hate he's getting when you watch the games. Last night he was good. I know he lost. The wild pitch is the main problem. But he was good. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying watching him, he does have good stuff. He gets bad swings. There's a couple of issues with him. One, he's a sinker baller who can't have long gaps of time off. And that's on the Yankees as much as it's on him. He can't go 6-7 days without pitching. He's terrible when he makes that first appearance after a long layoff. So even if they are a losing streak, even if he hasn't pitched in a few days, I don't care the situation, you have to get him in. Because he's just not good when he hasn't pitched in a long time. That's a problem for a closer. Totally agree. And then the main problem for him as a closer, as a reliever, as anything, is even when he makes his pitches, he tends to get beat on this soft contact crap. It's amazing. And it's not just swing and miss stuff, because I've gone over this, and I don't want to do it again. But if you look at Mariano Rivera's numbers, and I only bring him up because he's the greatest, he was a Yankee, and I am in no way comparing the two as pitchers or closers. Mariano had pinpoint control. This guy walks too many people. I'm not comparing them as closers. What I'm saying is if you look at the strikeout numbers, he gets as many swings and misses and as many strikeouts as Mariano did. When we say you can't have a closer who relies on contact, I will tell you the greatest closer of all time relied on contact. That's just a fact. Now, he didn't walk as many guys. He was much more pinpoint control. And he didn't seem to give up the same number of soft contact. Like, the cutter had guys just pulling ground balls that were outs. But it happened every once in a while with Mo that the contact would be too soft for double plays. That happened a lot with Mariano. But I'm just saying, like, the idea that you can't have a closer who doesn't get the swings and misses isn't accurate. The greatest of all time didn't get the swings and misses. 1998, he averaged 6.4 Ks per nine. Six in 1998. Clay is averaging 9.5. He's averaging 3 points more. He's averaging 3 strikeouts more per nine than Mariano did in 1998. Now, that's not to say he's as good, but I'm just saying you don't need the strikeout. He happens to get beat on ridiculously soft contact. And the biggest problem is the team itself doesn't fit a closer or a reliever in any inning that relies on soft contact because the infield defense isn't good. Ben Rice has to be replaced by DJ LeMahieu for defensive purposes. Gleyber Torres leads the American League in the world in errors at second base, and he has trouble sometimes turning the double play. And right now they're playing Jazz Chisholm at third base for the first time in his career. Part of the problem is the defensive infield isn't good enough to support a pitcher like Clay Holmes. That's part of it, too. All part of the reason why if they moved him out of the closer role tomorrow, I won't scream and cry. But I watch the games, and then I hear people say he sucks. I'm watching a closer who came in and got JT Realmuto, one of the best hitting catchers in the sport, who had three hits in the game to roll one over. Who had Trey Turner, who's hitting .320, who's only not winning the batting title because he doesn't have enough at bats, hit a soft little ground ball down the third baseline. Like, these guys didn't rip it up the gaps for doubles. Just a little bit of fairness to the guy. That's all. Not saying he has to be the closer. And I'm disappointed that Brian Cashman did not at least, and we'll see what Leiter is, but he did not bring in a guy who walks in the door with the ability to supplant him as the closer. I'm disappointed. He should have. All I'm saying is I watch the game and I see bad at bats. I see guys flailing in his breaking balls. I see guys hitting his sinkers into the ground. I see exactly what you're looking to do. And he still gets beat by it. It's frustrating. It's puzzling. And then there are the occasional blow-ups where it's his fault. That happens to any closer. But when we talk about the amount of blown saves, when you add it up with guys falling down, soft contact like last night, and then the occasional legitimate blown save that every closer has, well, now suddenly he has the most because his defense lets him down, and he's getting beat by things that nobody else gets beat by. And you add it all together, and now you have a closer who leads the league in blown saves. Richard in Brooklyn. What's up, Richard?
Hi. What do you think is the trade the Yankees could have made but didn't?
You got cut off there. I'm assuming just what's the trade the Yankees could have made. Yeah, look, when you look at it, offensively, I wanted Diaz, I wanted Rengifo, I wanted India. None of them got moved. So I don't know if those trades were possible, if the Yankees just didn't want to give up on it necessarily. Give up enough, but those guys weren't moved, so I can't go crazy and say, how do you not make that trade? Nobody made it. I wanted Flaherty for the rotation once I was kind of told it was close to happening. It sounds like they had an agreement on a deal, and the Yankees backed out because of injury. I think maybe he got scared off of Montas last year when everybody kills him for trading for a pitcher with an injury issue. He's got a back issue. He missed some time in early July. And we'll see if he pitches through the year. But this is exactly my defense of the Montas trade. What are you supposed to do? Not trade for him because he's injured? You can't win. You trade for him because he's injured and he gets injured. Well, this is what happens when you trade for pitchers who are injury prone. And then you back off a deal from Flaherty because he's got injury issues. Oh, well, the Dodgers don't seem to mind. You can't win. You can't win. But I would have liked to have seen that trade because I would have loved to have seen either Nestor transition to the bullpen, I suppose, because now they have no lefties. Hill, that's it. So I would have loved to have added a starter to either trade Nestor or move him to the bullpen. So I would have liked the Flaherty deal. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Tanner Scott, I get it. Do you really want to give up Spencer Jones plus for a rental this year? I know it's an all-in year. And I'm going to give you another element of why I'm somewhat positive about the trade deadline. But it's a rental. Do you really want to give up two or three of your best five prospects for a closer or a reliever who he can come in here and suck? They could not win the World Series, and you just gave up all your prospects, your best prospects, for a reliever of no control for half a year? If he had a year where you could have him this year and next year, I'm much more open to it. That's why, you know, you want to go trade for a top of the road. Scooble was there to be traded for. He's got 3 years of control. That's why I like the Jazz Chisholm trade, because you got another 2 years of control. I don't know if I can make that trade. I got to be honest. I don't know if I can trade away two or three of the best five prospects I have for a guy who's going to be here for 2 months, no matter how much the all-in nature of the season is. I don't know. So while I am underwhelmed and I expected more, there are relievers who got moved that you possibly could have made a trade. Like, if a deal was held up by anybody for anything, like, other than Spencer Jones for a reliever, even if it's a short-term reliever, I could see making the move. But again, I'll come back and I'll give you a reason why maybe there's a silver lining and what it means for the thought process of Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees with how they behaved at the trade deadline. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. And again, just to say this again to the caller about Brian, about Gleyber Torres. Last year, 2023, Gleyber Torres had an OPS of 783 in April, 785 in May, in June, 615, in July, 748, in August, 1,000, and in September and October, 800. So he hit, while the season was still on the line, he hit 245 in April and May. In April and March, excuse me, he had 286 in May, 198 in June, 275 in July with a 748 OPS, and then 327 in August. And if you remember in the standings, the season wasn't dead in August. You want to get on Gleyber Torres? Fine. I don't want him here next year. I don't care if he'll play for free. I heard a caller mention to Keith whether or not he's eligible for a qualifying offer. Obviously he is. And no, I'm not giving him one because I'm afraid he'll take it. I don't want Gleyber Torres here. But that let's not reimagine history. Last year, he had the best offensive year of any Yankee this side of Judge, and Judge didn't play. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 1 hour down, two more to go. Reviewing the trade deadline, talking about a couple of wins, arguing about closers. Come and join the conversation. I got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan.